welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
Series, and it's called What's the Deal? I love doing that every single time. Let's get this up, all right? And it's called What's the Deal? And today we are talking about what's the deal with all the empty threats. And the whole idea of the message series is there's things that we carry, there's things that we pick up, there's things we put down. We don't always know why. And for the last several weeks and for a while longer, we're going to be talking through cultural or philosophical or theological things that we don't always understand why we do what we do. And if you don't follow me on social media, wow, are you missing out on some high level, Carly, right? My social media is like, that is my canvas and I'm the artist, right? I think that's what you told me. So it is some great social media, and I put out this question because it ties into all the empty threats. And the empty threats comes from going to church. And Dad, I love you more than anything in the world, but I'm going to be talking. He's like, oh, great. It's kind of the downside of going to your kids when he gets the microphone. But there's things in church that you don't know until you do them, right? You know, you don't know what you can't do until you do them. And I remember going to church at St. Francis in Carlton, Minnesota, and you're a kid and you want to do kid things like wear a hat in church, talk loudly when you have questions, or move, right? And you don't know that you can't do those things, that you can't be a kid in church until you bring a kid to church. Then all of a sudden you realize you can't be a kid in church because there's all the empty threats. So help me God, right? The same thing my grandpa, you know, did to my dad, all right? The same thing I did to my kids. There was one time. We just planted the church. We're in Cloquet in the high school auditorium. And it's Easter or Christmas. I think it was Christmas Eve. So it's a big service, right? And my daughter comes out. I don't know how she got on stage. She got out of Neighborhood Kids, went around, came onto the stage. There's like where the steps go down. What do you call the side? Like where part of the stage jetted out. And she's up there. I don't know if anyone remembers this. Mom, do you remember this? She's up there like walking back and forth and like dancing. And I don't realize until everyone's not paying attention to me. And I want to know who's robbing me of my attention. And so I look to my left and there's my daughter. And I realize I can't make an empty threat in front of all these people. You do that in private, right? That the way God intended. And this is like, so like my daughter is just being a kid. She's just being herself. But somehow it feels like a threat to me that maybe my kid's not acting the way that I didn't tell him I didn't want to act. Right? You've been there before. What is it about church that can bring this out of us? Why do we have all these hidden expectations? Why do we have all these invisible boundaries? Not just in church, but church is a place that comes out. So my question to you is, this is the feedback part. Is there things that you can remember, maybe when you were a kid or when you were an adult, of things that you were surprised that you could not do in church? Do you have, like, maybe mine was, I didn't know you couldn't put the Bible on the floor. I didn't know that God cared so much about books being on the floor. Does anyone have an example? Food or drink in the sanctuary. Yes, even the word sanctuary. Hey, honestly, it is. Because it makes it sound like it's this holier-than-thou place, and you're like, it's just a room, my man, right? Food or drink in the sanctuary? What else? Who else? No looking back? Like you couldn't do this? Wow! They told you that? Wow! Sorry, I shouldn't be compounding on your trauma. Well, I've never heard of that one. I would want to bring up the leaders and just ask them, what happened? What happened to you that you can't look back? All right. You want to know, what are the people doing behind you that you can't look back, right? No hats in church. I know. I'm a sinner, right? No asking questions. I remember that one. Yeah. Anyone else? Anne? The devil would take a picture. The devil has cameras now. The devil's getting wise. Okay? That's so crazy. Sorry, wrong word. That is surprising. Okay? Anyone else? Pastor? No clapping? Wow, we're not a very clappy church. Well, except this morning we clapped. Right? We're not a very clappy church. What, do you know why they said no clapping? It's about time someone got it right. I appreciate that, right? Is that why you guys don't clap at the end of all my messages? Thank you. I appreciate that respect, right? All for her. All right. Okay, so you don't attempt God? Oh, guys, same thing, right? Sorry, sounds like that in that church is probably the same thing, right? All right, couldn't wear shorts, okay, yeah? Okay, that Tom decided the greatest sin that Jesus said in Matthew 19, you can't serve communion without a tie, all right? Because Jesus didn't die for some open collar, all right? I think we all know that. Okay? Anyone else? You couldn't laugh? Who was monitoring? I guess everybody was probably monitoring that, yeah. Whoa. Okay? Anyone else have a story of what they could not do in church that you didn't realize you couldn't do it until you did it? To pray behind with your hands behind your back? Oh, because you're supposed to pray with your hands like this. Oh, I love it. They were supposed to have their eyes closed. You got them, right? That's good. This is very rich. Anyone else want to share a story? So I had people text me and DM me stories because they didn't want to put it out publicly to people. I'm not going to say their names. But it was around when I used to work at a different denomination called The Vineyard. And they were telling stories, which at the time it felt very progressive. The space felt very progressive. And the stories that people shared with me that some other pastors went up and told them, it's funny because we don't always know how to handle trauma, right? And we don't always know how to handle patriarchy. Because that's what it is, right? A lot of the rules, can't wear shorts, can't wear skirts, can't turn around. It's all control, right? I'm kind of getting to the end of my message. But one person said that they wore jeans with a small hole in them. And it was above the knee. And they got pulled aside at church and said, what are you doing? You can't do this. This is way too tempting for men. And what was hilarious is like then how much skin can I show, right? What is this, like, that would be like right here, right? What is this a threat? But enough of where the pastor had to go out of the way to go talk to the person to bring correction. Why do we do this? We do this in church, in family systems, maybe at work, in where we want to control what people do because it doesn't feel safe, right? There's nothing wrong with wearing a skirt. There's nothing wrong with turning around and looking back until you feel like you might be losing power, influence, right? You feel like you might be losing access or feeling you might be losing your voice. And when we do this, we're trying to manipulate and control to have a desired outcome. And what's the desired outcome? More power, more control. And here's the hard part. We're going to be reading in a little bit from the Bible, is that there's a real big problem with the Bible because it's filled with people being honest. It's filled with people asking questions. It's filled with people doing really horrible things. It's filled with people being angry. It's filled with people making mistakes. And yet they left the stories in there. So where along the way did we go from where you can process, you can be honest, you can be open to where you have to play a game. Because really, anytime you put these invisible boundaries on, anytime you put these hidden expectations, it's because you're playing, you're not wanting people to be themselves. You want people to play a version of themselves because you have this idea of this preferred vision of what you think you need to be, which we call in the church holiness. And holy, people love the idea of holiness, right? They're like, it would be great to be holy. But then most people think, well, that means I have to stop X, Y, Z. That means I have to start doing A, B, C. And none of it sounds fun, right? Is that what holiness is? Is a lack of not doing things? Is holiness just we do only specific things? Now, let me say that, yes, it can be. There's things that you could do that could make you feel more connected to God and ultimate love, and there's things you can do that might harm you along the way. And there might be things that I do that maybe Tom does that might be, work for him but not, might not work for me. But when we play this game of holiness has to only look like this, then we're not really doing what this Bible is inviting us to do. Instead, we're doing what this man is telling us to do. And rarely does that end well. Right? Rarely. And I've used this example a bunch of times, but it's profound to me. In seminary, this professor was going through all these different ways of thinking, and it was all about power, and he called it indecent theology, which is a great name because instantly, like, grabbed my attention. Indecent theology is, at what point did someone say, hey, this is decent? The way that you want to express your love, the way you want to express gratitude, the way that you want to express joy, the way you want to express anger or frustration. If you fall within these lines, it's decent. But by saying that, you automatically are saying, and if you fall outside of these lines, you are now indecent. And we had a whole, for about 2 hours, we talked on what things, and he brought up some really good, problematic, hard conversations. Because when a bunch of us were like, oh, what about this, professor? He's like, well, why is that bad? Why do you think swearing in this context is always, now if you're a kid, listen to your parents, right? Forgot that there's kids here, changing part of my message, burp, 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 burp. Of what is indecent, have you ever thought to ask why? Why have we made this so bad? Why is this way of belonging decent and this one indecent? And it was a super good conversation of if people are being honest, if people are being themselves, why is that a threat? Well, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Yeah, it does. Well, I don't like the way they talk. I don't like the way that they raise their voice. I don't like the way, whatever it might be. It's a good conversation of why have we labeled that bad or less than? And what we're going to read here in the Bible, Psalm 13, is a wild ride. And it is problematic. It contradicts itself, it feels like, which is such good news. Because I do that every single day, right? It's one thing I love about the Bible is that it's so human. It's so honest to our lived experience. In Psalm 13, and this is out of the Message translation, and it reads this. Long enough, God, you've ignored me long enough. I've looked at the back of your head long enough. Long enough, I've carried this ton of trouble, lived with a stomach full of pain. Long enough, my arrogant enemies have looked down their noses at me. Take a good look at me, God, my God. I want to look life in the eye so no enemy can get the best of me or laugh when I fall on my face. I throw myself headlong into your arms. I'm celebrating your rescue. I'm singing at the top of my lungs. I'm so full of answered prayers. Now, the Psalms were written as poetry, sure, but really it was a form of prayer. It was a form that you could redefine solace, but primarily it was this author sharing their lived experience. And it starts off by complaining. It starts off by saying, where are you, God? How long do I have to do this whole thing asking for you? I love the idea of they translate, how long do I have to look at the back of your head? Because if you remember trying to get a hold of your parents or your grandparents or someone of power or influence, like, it's like you're talking, like, why won't you even recognize that I'm here? It's very honest. But look at verse 5. Goes from like, where are you? And in other Psalms, talks about how their enemies are winning. And this is very true to Psalms. It starts off with this like honesty, all these things, and it ends with, and I've thrown myself into your arms and all my prayers are going to get answered, right? It feels a little bit manic of like, where are you, God? But I'm also celebrating all the answered prayers. But my prayers have not been answered, hence why I started Psalm 13 in the way that I did, right? It's a little confusing. But here's what I love about it. Have you ever, how do I phrase this? Have you ever gone away to like a retreat? I don't know, do people still do retreats? Like, right? Like maybe for work or maybe it was for a spiritual formation. I just met a kid who went to a confirmation camp and I didn't know that was a thing. I'm like, I had to go to like vacation Bible school, like a phrase where the words get worse and worse, less fun with each word. Vacation, interested, Bible, why, school, right? And I'm like, you're going away for a whole week for confirmation? He's like, yeah. And inside I'm like, way to go, man, right? I imagine it was really, really, it was really positive. Why am I talking about confirmation camp? I don't even remember. So, retreats. When you're at a retreat, or you get away with some of your best friends, or you get away, maybe you and your partner, or you get away for work, and someone begins, like you're doing small talk, and you're talking through things, and then one person like just like cuts a vein and is all of a sudden really vulnerable, and how it shifts the entire like culture in the room of where that person, maybe you're out and you're having drinks, and you're at dinner, and you're talking, and then one person says, I don't know if I can do this marriage thing anymore. I've been depressed for 3 months, right? Whatever it might be, of where they get really honest and you can just sense like things are shifting, and now all of a sudden you feel like you want to be vulnerable and you begin to share things that you've always wanted to tell people but you felt like you couldn't. Anyone been there before? Right? It is a powerful thing because when people get real, it invites you to be your true self as well. And then when you get done, this is Brené Brown. I think it's Braving the Wilderness. I learned it from her. And she talks about a vulnerability hangover, right? Where all of a sudden you're like, and you get it all out and you feel good. And all of a sudden you look around the room like, I just bared my soul to these people. And you try pulling it back. This is the Bible. This is what people did. This is what they're inviting us to do, for us to be our real selves. And our real selves can be angry. It can be disappointed. It can be frustrated. It can be elated. It can be filled with joy. It can be filled with grief. And it does not mean there's a lack of holiness. It does not mean that you're problematic. It does not mean that there's something wrong with you. What it means is that you need to vent. You need to process. Like, here's another way of thinking. In the Bible, the Bible's written by men, patriarchy, right? For men. And it slips in some good news to other groups of people, which is really positive, but you can't get away that it was written by men for men. And so when it talks about anger, I think we'd say like, hey, anger is like, can be problematic, right? Especially for men. So the Bible written by men to men is going to say, right, let's be humble, let's be meek. Let's like slow down. Let's extend graciousness and kindness, which is really wise because men do need to do that. But does that mean then that every groups and demographics people have to follow that same thing? I would argue no. I do believe that there's demographics, especially, right, some women that could probably benefit from leaning into the anger. Because what you guys, hopefully you've heard this, of all the studies we've done of when boys in elementary school raise their voice, lean in, you know, we call it leadership. We call it natural born leaders. Look at those young boys. Girls who do the same thing, are they met with the same kindness? No, what do they call them? Bossy. What do you call, what is the stereotype that they give women who are bossy? We can't use those words here. We can't. But you know it. It's a part of our lived experience. And we can, what's the deal? There's words that we associate to entire demographics of people that we just like, yeah, okay, that's just how it is. Why? Why is it that if a woman can act like a man, it's considered bossy or bad or manipulative? Angry. How many times have you heard that? Why do you got to be so angry? You should just smile more, right? Why do we do this? Control. Maybe there's times of where we do need to be angry. Maybe there's times where we have to throw a fit. Maybe there's times for a little bit of holy trouble. Now, here's what I'm not doing, right? I maybe Brian already is thinking, like, I'm going to go and throw a rock through that person's car because my pastor said I could do it, right? That's not what I'm saying. But here's what I'm saying. In the Bible, being who you are was not only allowed, it was celebrated. Huh, I'm going to take that back. Not every story in the Bible is that celebrated, but there is this theme of where the people who put the Bible together and got to edit it left these stories in. Maybe they're trying to tell us there's times where you can be honest with God and that's not a threat. Maybe there's times you need to be honest with yourself and that's not a threat. Maybe there's times to be honest with the people around you and it's not a threat. When we can be who we are, we're moving in the way of God. So there's a couple things, and we're going to take communion together. Yeah, it's right there. Two things first. The first one is this. What are the things in your life? This could go a thousand different directions. What are the things in your life that you've been told that is bad? What are the things in your life that you've been carrying with you, maybe for days, weeks, decades, that you associate shame to and shame with? And have you ever thought about why? Like in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 7 years of when I feel like I went from deconstructing my faith to reconstructing my faith, there's been several things that I've picked back up that I will gladly, if you want to talk later about it, I'll gladly talk about it. There's things that I've picked back up that I left down for so long because I felt so much shame. Like one of those was hell. It's funny, and I'm not here to tell you if, like, I don't believe in a conscious burning pit hell, right? I don't. And I'm in a rich history of other biblical scholars, theologians, and people. And if you do, that's fine. But for me, I can't hold on to it because I believe in a loving God. But the things that I would avoid thinking about because I was so afraid that I'd end up in that place. There would be whole entire subjects that I wouldn't even like approach because it's like, well, I was told if I think that, then I'm going to hell. And so then it would keep me, I'd feel this mystery and this wonder like in the sunset, like just in the peripheral, and I would leave it because I'm like, obedience. Stay like this, stay here, and you're safe. But even when I was stayed here, it wasn't safe. It just felt like I have to stay here, don't move, don't grow, don't think, don't evolve, don't have any nuance, just be certain, certain, certain. And the whole time, it's like you're wearing a blindfold. I have to be certain that there's this thing out there, but you can't see it, but someone else told me, it's there, just stay. And you take that blindfold off, and you see there's this wide open space. This is Romans chapter 5. It's filled with this wide open spaces of God's benevolent love and grace. And is it problematic? Yeah. Is it hard? Yes. Is it messy? Way more than you can ever comprehend. But is it beautiful? At times, it is. Is it liberating? Is it freeing? Yeah. And it's worth it. So, what are the things that you've been carrying around with you that maybe it's time to ask why? And the second thing I learned from my wife, if you've not met my wife, Nikki, she's wonderful, and she is a coach, and one of the things that she did that helped me a lot is she would say things like, well, what do you want to renegotiate? Instead of like, what do you want to do? She's like, well, what, we made this agreement. We said we're going to do these things. These are going to be our values, or this is what we're going to do for vacation, or this is how we're going to spend our money. And she'd say, well, what do you want to renegotiate? And for some reason, that word for my brain opened up to, oh, we really can be honest about what we feel and what we want, what we're hoping for, or what we're afraid of. And does it mean that I have to just say, like, okay, I guess whatever you want to do. And it's also not Nikki just saying, I guess whatever you want to do. It's this, can we come together and be honest? And in that honesty and that vulnerability, can we dream maybe of a new reality or a new future or a new way of spending money or new, you see where I'm going? I believe the same thing about God. Because in this Psalm 13 itself, it shows that there's this like conversation between the author and God. There is this collaborative. There's this co-creation of saying, well, where are you? And it felt safe enough that this guy, this person could ask God of what they're doing. Second thing. And I learned this from womenist theology, which is a theology, a way of thinking about God through the lived experiences of Black women. And one of the things I read about Psalm 13 specifically is to be able to name what exhausts you is holy. Right? Putting words to what is robbing you of joy, putting language to things that are giving you anxiety can be so freeing, right? Being able to say this about my job, or how many times, I mean, maybe everyone else is a lot healthier than me, right? It'd be like, I come home, it's like 4:30, I'm like, I am so tired. And Nikki's like, you say that every day at 4:30. And I'm like, oh, maybe this is a normal thing. And then it got me like, well, why am I so tired at 4:30? Being able to name, right? This is a very, very small example. Being able to name what exhausts me. In therapy, being able to name of what was robbed, what was robbed of me, what was taken from me. That was a lot harder. But being able to name of what that person, what those people did to me, gave me a sense of I can now begin to work through this. This is what the Bible is inviting us. It's a process. We can renegotiate to name, to be able to name what it is that you're feeling. So, with all that fun news, what we're going to do is take communion. And what I want you to do as you make your way, and everyone's welcome to communion. If you've never taken communion here at Neighborhood, you can take it. If you're an adult, if you're a kid, then I'm going to trust that whatever your relationship and your expectation of what you want for your kids to take communion, they're more than welcome to take it, right? We don't have a lot of barriers to be able to get average food, all right? But everyone's welcome to take it. And as you're making your way up, I'm going to ask you to take the communion and then go back and sit back down. And then we'll all take it together. But here's just one question I want you to think as you're getting communion. I'll put some music on. What do you want to say to God? Like, if you could write a letter, and I'm not going to ask anyone, I guess if you really want to, you can come up here and yell it to the cross if you like, right? We're very, you know, Nordic, stoic people. But if you had the opportunity, what would you say to God? Would it be a thank you? Would it be praise? Would it be worship? Would it be lamenting? Would it be anger? Would it be rage? Would it be indifference? And why is that so bad? Because what you feel is you, and you are not a threat to God. What you feel is a part of the makeup of who you are, and that is rich and that is beautiful. And communion is this way that we get to remember. It's a sacrament. It's a way we get to remember of the gift and the beauty and the majesty of what Christ did for us. And what Christ did for us in this whole liberation thing is allow us to keep moving and evolving and growing. And the only way I know how to do that is by being honest with where I'm at. So I'm going to put some music on. If you want to take communion, come up, take the elements, sit back down. And then we'll pray and we'll take it together.